Blog Talk Radio.
As you know, one of the primary purposes of the special counsel's investigation was to determine whether President Trump's campaign or any individual associated with it conspired or coordinated with the Russian government to interfere in the 2016 election. Volume 1 of the special counsel's report describes the results of that investigation. As you will see, the special counsel's report states that his, quote, investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. I am sure that all Americans share my concern about the efforts of the Russian government to interfere in our presidential election. As the special counsel report makes clear, the Russian government sought to interfere in our election process. But thanks to the special counsel's thorough investigation, we now know that the Russian operatives who perpetrated these schemes did not have the cooperation of President Trump or the Trump campaign, or the knowing assistance of any other American for that matter. That is something that all Americans can and should be grateful to have confirmed. The special counsel report outlines two main efforts by the Russian government to influence the 2016 election. First, the report details efforts by the Internet Research Agency, a Russian company with close ties to the Russian government, to sow social discord among American voters through disinformation and social media operations. Following a thorough investigation of this disinformation campaign, the special counsel brought charges in federal court against several Russian nationals and entities for their respective roles in this scheme. Those charges remain pending, and the individual defendants remain at large. But the special counsel found no evidence that any American, including anyone associated with the Trump campaign, conspired or coordinated with the Russian government or the IRA in this illegal scheme. Indeed, as the report states, quote, the investigation did not identify evidence that any U.S. person knowingly or intentionally coordinated with the IRA's interference operation, unquote. Put another way, the special counsel found no collusion by any Americans in IRA's illegal activities. Second, the report details efforts by the Russian military officials associated with the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Organization, to hack into computers and steal documents and emails from individuals associated with the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton's campaign for the purpose of eventually publicizing these documents. Obtaining such unauthorized, following a thorough investigation of these hacking operations, the special counsel brought charges to court against several Russian military officers for their respective roles in these illegal hacking operations. Those charges are still pending and the defendants remain at large. But again, the special counsel's report did not find any evidence that members of the Trump campaign or anyone associated with the campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in these hacking operations. In other words, there was no evidence of the Trump campaign collusion with the Russian government's hacking. The special counsel's investigation also examined Russian efforts to publish stolen emails and documents on the internet. The special counsel found that after the GRU disseminated some of the stolen documents to entities that it controlled, DC Leaks and Guccifer II, the GRU transferred some of the stolen materials to WikiLeaks for publication. WikiLeaks then made a series of document dumps. The special counsel also investigated whether any member or affiliate of the Trump campaign encouraged or otherwise played a role in these dissemination efforts. Under applicable law, publication of these types of material would not be criminal unless the publisher also participated in the underlying hacking conspiracy. Here, too, the special counsel's report did not find that any person associated with the Trump campaign illegally participated in the dissemination of the materials. Finally, the special counsel investigated a number of links or contacts between the Trump campaign officials and individuals connected with the Russian government during the 2016 presidential campaign. After reviewing these contacts, the special counsel did not find any conspiracy to violate U.S. law involving Russian-linked persons and any persons associated with the Trump campaign. So that's the bottom line. After nearly 2 years of investigation, thousands of subpoenas, hundreds of warrants and witness interviews, the special counsel confirmed that the Russian government sponsored efforts to illegally interfere with the 2016 presidential election, but did not find that the Trump campaign or other Americans colluded in those efforts. After finding no underlying collusion with Russia, the special counsel's report goes on to consider whether certain actions of the president could amount to obstruction of the special counsel's investigation.
Welcome to the Bachelor Pad. We thank you for joining us, as always, here. Thanks to Dr. Wilbur J. Leon for joining us. As always, we appreciate him coming on. And you just heard a 6 or 7 minute excerpt of the Attorney General Barr, who announced what the bottom line is, quote unquote, what the Mueller report says. And I'm going to bring in my next guest to kind of decipher that. He is a contributor and writer for the Huffington Post and the San Francisco Examiner, also a host of the Politically Incorrect podcast. He's Jim Williams. And Jim, always good to have you on, my friend.
Been a busy day, L.A.
Yeah,
just listening to Attorney General Barr, it was totally amazing, because at the end of the day, first of all, collusion is not a legal term. Collusion is more of a political term. The term that most people get caught up in is conspiracy. If you conspire with someone, that's a legal situation. After reading this report and digesting as much of it as I possibly could, I don't see where what the AG said squares with what the report said.
Well, I mean, you kind of took away a few of my questions for you, but I'll go this route. It make a case for the AG reporting this in the sense of along the lines of Ken Starr and even the report prior to Ken Starr with Bill Clinton with Richard Nixon that Mueller report. And I was going to say that with Bob Mueller, the impression I read is that a president can't be indicted. He put it on Congress. So because of that, Attorney General Barr is basically saying the same thing based on two presidents, one who was impeached and silenced, one who was impeached and had to leave office.
Well, yeah. Basically, Clinton was impeached and then was reelected. The situation with this is, let me get to the point of Barr. What did Barr say that was legal? I mean, was correct? Okay. Barr took the strand that the campaign, the Trump campaign, did not hack or get themselves involved in any of the hacking that the Russians did. Nobody ever thought that they did. Okay. It was, did the campaign benefit in any way from these relationships with the Russians? And did they, you know, when President Trump made the proclamation of please go out and please, you know, if you've got WikiLeaks, if you've got these, you know, Clinton emails, dump them out there. And 2 days later, amazingly, they show up. Again, what he did is he painted around the actual report to take and cherry pick things to make it look as if there was no collusion, is what he said. In essence, no conspiracy. At the end of the day, what Bob Mueller did was, and you're correct, I think it was on page 2 of the report, he said that basically without question, he Mueller now, said that since the president cannot be indicted, I'm writing this document in essence to give it to Congress and to give it to the Justice Department as a roadmap, basically, to decide whether or not he committed crimes that would rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, which, of course, would then follow into an impeachment hearing. So that's what he did. He crafted a document, a very well-crafted document, that will go to Congress and will be decided as to whether or not will they impeach the President of the United States over obstruction of justice, frankly. And you know, from a very important part here, actually need to commit the act of obstruction of justice. You need only to be proved that you had tried to commit the crime that's like robbing a jewelry store. If you get caught trying to rob the jewelry store, well, that's just as, you know, important as actually physically going in and robbing. So what he did is he painted the case that there was obstruction possibilities throughout there. And that's why in that four-page document that was written by the AG earlier as kind of a prequel to the Mueller report, that in there, in the 75 words, he didn't actually even use a sentence, but it was a Mueller sentence, that he said that, you know, the Mueller's point said that he could not exonerate the president from this. And he can't, because there's, you know, the report is littered with all types of potential, and I say potential because it's up to Congress to decide, potential obstruction of justice obstacles that are, you know, thrown out all over the place.
Jim, we're talking with Jim Williams, of course, here on the pad. Some people are very critical of Bob Mueller, and the fact that he took the anal way, if you will, and sort of the institutional way, and basically said, in so many words, what my understanding is, I want to prosecute, but I don't have enough to convict. So it's almost like the theory I talk to people about President Obama. Just follow me, if you will.
Sure.
With universal health care, he knew it wasn't going to pass, so he didn't push it. But why not push it so you put it on the other person? If you push it, then the onus is not on you. So with Mueller, if you know you can't convict, why not say, I want to convict, but I don't have that, and then push it on Congress rather than say, you know, allude to that you have the inclination of bringing charges, but because of sitting president, it's not going to be charged. I don't do it. It leaves people on both sides. To me, if I was him, on both sides, being aggravated and frustrated with you at that point, just put it out there. Put your stuff out there. If you believe it, you stand by it, you're morally convinced about it, put it out there and then let the chips fall where they may. It's the same problem I have with President Obama. It's the same problem I have with Bob Mueller.
I can't speak for Mueller in this as to why he didn't or did what he did. I think that what he was expecting and hoping to do was to lay this to Congress and say, okay, here's what I'm giving you this document. It's up to you to prosecute if you feel that information here. Again, I can't speak to Mueller's mindset. It is, however, I don't think it's a good document for the president. I don't think it's something that he wanted to see. And I was quite frankly surprised that so much of it was not redacted. There's quite a bit in there. There's some very interesting things. Page 300, for instance, was after Trump had talked with McGahn about Don McGahn, who was at that time the White House counsel, as to him attempting to figure out a way to get rid of Mueller. And, McGahn was arguing with the president that that was not a good idea and that, you know, nothing good could come of it. And they had a pretty graphic argument on page 300 of the document. This is after that dust-up. On page 300, it says, after Trump directed McGahn, call Rosenstein, that's Rob Rosenstein, who was overseeing, he was the acting AG at the time, and have Mueller removed, McGahn called his own lawyer, drove to the White House, packed up his office, prepared to submit a letter of resignation, and told then Ryan Priebus, who was the chief of staff, that the president had asked him to do some crazy, and then the S word ends with a T. I think we all know what that's going on. So, I mean, there was all kinds of craziness going on here. And the president was freaking, and, you know, there are, as I said, this document is littered with all types of potential, and again, it's up to Congress, potential obstruction of justice.
But potential, just to add, lead to the next question, potential is a gray area. It's not black and white, and that, to me, from my perspective,
yeah.
I hear what you're saying, Jim. I totally agree with you. So I'm just saying that if it's gray, it's almost like it was gray enough for the media to keep talking about it. So here's my question before I go to Reggie and others.
Sure.
If the assumption is based on the report that I read, is that the president didn't commit any crimes or it's not impeachable. We'll get back to that in a second. Only and solely because his attorneys and other people in his camp told him not to do it or stopped him or preventing him from doing stuff that would be impeachable or illegal, which could get him arrested, then when you look at that, is that a narrative that the Democrats can take and say, look, we could impeach him. We should impeach him. We might impeach him or try to. We'll talk about, you know, the Senate and all that.
Right.
We don't have to get all that. But if those things are in place, the president didn't do anything wrong. He didn't. He wanted to say, I want to kill somebody, and somebody took the gun away from him, basically. I want to go shoot somebody, but they took the gun. So he didn't shoot anybody, so he didn't commit a crime. He didn't do anything wrong. So how do the Democrats, I guess my question to you is, how do they spend that? And will they even try to spend that? Will they even try to continue to look at impeachment process at this point?
I think they're in a damned if they do, damned if they don't situation here, because I think there's going to be a very large amount of certainly strong members from the progressive side who are going to say, aha, we have a smoking gun here. Let's get them. Without, as I said, you mentioned it, we've talked about it before, we know the Senate's not going to turn him, you know, get rid of him. So are you going to end up doing what happened to Clinton? And that was when Gingrich went after, you know, an impeachment of Clinton, knowing that he wasn't going to get removed from office. He just, you know, stoked the fires of the Democrats, and they ended up, you know, reelecting him.
Explain that, Jim. I want you to explain that to the audience, how that works and how Democrats can impeach in the Congress yet not go through in the Senate. I want people to understand politically how that works.
Okay. All right, here we go. We're going to play a little bit of a history game.
Yep.
Here's how it works. The House brings a trial, the president to a trial, okay? And it literally is a trial. And there would be a certain number of members of Congress who would serve as the lawyers, if you will, for the United States. And then the president would have his own personal lawyer, okay? And they would argue the case just like you would argue a case in court, except it would be up to the members of the House to decide if indeed they felt that what happened rose to the level of a high crime and misdemeanor, okay? Now, in the case of William Jefferson Clinton, it had to do with an obstruction of justice charge against him for lying to a grand jury about having sex with Monica Lewinsky. Okay, so it was a grand jury. He lied to a grand jury, which is indeed a crime. Okay, did it rise to the level of the high crimes and misdemeanors? Well, the Gingrich-led Republican House felt that it did. They voted as such. And then the trial moves to the Senate, where in the Senate, they then take up the same trial, and they would then go in, and at that point, they discuss whether the high crimes and misdemeanors that the House found is worthy of taking the president out of office, in other words, removing him, which takes two-thirds of the Senate to do it. So at that point, it didn't happen. They didn't feel that it rose to the high crimes and misdemeanor stature. And so he was, in essence, impeached, only the second president to be impeached, and the first one being Andrew Johnson, who was the vice president of Abraham Lincoln and basically became president when Lincoln was killed. He was not removed from office. So there have been two presidents who have been impeached, but neither president has been removed from office. And so in this particular case, could they impeach President Trump? The answer to the question is likely yes. Could they remove him from office? Likely no, because two-thirds of the Senate would have to vote for that, and I don't think anybody with half of, you know, who followed this for more than 10 minutes would say that there's any chance that the Senate is going to pull that off. So it's unlikely that wouldn't happen. So in a short little mini political science lecture there, that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah, and I needed you to give that civics lesson to people who understand that I've had people, and you clearly said it better than I could, that I have people think that, you know, because the Democrats run the House, that they could just impeach him and he's going to walk down, you know, Pennsylvania Avenue and go home. Don't work like that. The Senate has to confirm that. And just because they said, well, you know, I had somebody say, well, Clinton was impeached. Well, Clinton was impeached, but he was censored. He wasn't forced out of office.
Right.
And that's a difference people understand. And as you mentioned with former President Nixon, he wasn't impeached. They were going to impeach his butt, and he resigned. He said, I'm out. So that there's a difference. And people got to understand their history. You got to learn that. I just wanted you to talk about that. Talking about Jim Williams, before we go, Jim, I want to go to Reggie Howell for some questions. Good evening, Reggie Howell, sir. Do not bring up my penguins, and I hope all is well.
No, it's all good. Hey, Jim, how you doing?
Hey, Reggie. Always a pleasure.
You know, it's really a shame that an old man beat up a 19-year-old on the hockey pond. I mean, that young man from North Carolina is still trying to pick himself off the desk in that beat down he gave him. So the little boy still got it. But, you know, what disturbs me, Jim, is that Democrats fall in love with candidates and Republicans fall in line.
Right.
I do not understand the apparatus of what the Democrat used to get that message out. Case in point, Don Brazile goes to the evil empire over at Fox News. And they make her look like the Johnny Carson, Ed McMahon on a straight job. I mean, it's really sad the way they just wearing her tail out, considering that she was once a very prominent moving, shaking Democrat Party, and now she's a side joke. You want to get your thoughts about Don Brazile on Fox News and the follow-up, if I may?
Sure. I thought, you know, look, I have great respect for Ms. Brazile. She's very bright. She's a very articulate lady. She was very, you know, she ran the Democratic Party for a number of years and is quite adept at understanding politics. She's a brilliant lady. I have no idea why she signed with Fox. I mean, it's obviously her choice. So I think she knew what she was getting into when she signed it. I have no idea why she took the job, because clearly it's not necessarily something that, as you say, she's not going to get the kind of platform she had when she was at CNN, or even the kind of platform she would have gotten had she gone just to, say, MSNBC or someplace else. But it was her choice, so I assume she felt that there was some reason that she could do it and do it in a way that she would be comfortable with.
Yeah, well, like I say, everybody tries to sell for two pieces of silver, but which would be one of her conscience has to look at that. Follow-up question, sir. Nobody wants to talk about this, but CNN and MSNBC were the ones that gave this 45 monster over $1 billion for free advertisement when it came to running for election. Now the serpent is biting them. They should be held accountable, and one of them is not calling them out because they gave this clown free advertisement. What have we learned from the whores, and I'm saying the whores, of those two entities that want to make money at all costs, and now they're being persecuted?
Well, I think what they learned is that they decided that they were going to take something that they thought was a sideshow, and, you know, you're absolutely right, Reggie. I mean, he was on CNN and MSNBC. He didn't come on. People don't realize he didn't really do anything seriously on Fox until it was almost midway through the primary season, when it was looking like he was actually going to win before Fox even took him seriously. I mean, because, you know, they were still playing on the, you know, for the Republicans, and Donald Trump was, you know, the enemy. So Jeff Zucker, who was running CNN at the time, who, you know, was the guy who greenlighted The Apprentice, felt, you know, comfortable with him on, and he was on a number of shows at CNN and MSNBC, sometimes twice in the same day. So, yeah, they created this monster, and then now they're living with it. So I think if there's things to be learned, it is that, you know, A, you got to take everybody who runs for office seriously, and B, if you're going to give somebody a soapbox, for God's sake, please pay attention to what they're trying to say.
Thank you, sir.
You're
100%
right, Reg. You're 100% right.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I want to follow up on this before we go. Because Reggie, and I'll go to you, Jim, afterwards. But Reggie, I love you. You're my big brother. But I disagree with you. I think you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And so for Bernie Sanders going on Fox, the Democrats need to do that. I think,
no, you're 100%
because,
right.
Because I think, and I think because, Reggie, I think that they have to allow themselves to look, and if nothing else, look, that's the word. And Troy, I see you. Look in a manner of that they're not going to run away from the conservative network. Like, they got to put their stuff out there. So Bernie doing it, I think they all should do it. I think they need to do it and nail those creepy people to the cross. And that's how we think about them, right? Those who are Trump supporters, Reggie. But I think that, I think, and I said this before, actually, and I see you, T. I thought that all the Democratic candidates, even going back to when now former president at the time, former Senator Obama was running, go to the enemy, go to the fire, let them see what you are, combat it, and then you get votes ready. So that I don't have a problem with Bernie Sanders going on Fox and saying whatever, because the one thing about Bernie Sanders, like him or not, like him or not, vote for him or not, his message has always been the same. Always. Mm-hmm. I can't speak for all the other people, but I can tell you, I can promise you, just in watching him and following him, his message has always been the same. So if he's on MSNBC or Fox or CNN or ABC or whatever the case may be, message the same, ready. So I just think that you go into Daniel's fire, if you're biblical, you understand that. You go into the fire, and you do what you need to do, and those who are going to vote for Trump are going to vote for Trump anyway, but you might get a few that go, you know what, dang, that kind of made some sense. I need to look at this candidate. And I think that's what he was doing, and I would encourage Democratic candidates, Reg, to do the same.
Let me
Reg is saying. I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to upcut you, Reg.
No problem.
I just said we disagree to disagree. I'm sorry, you know,
yeah.
Because I'm not going to sit up in here and sell myself a two-piece of silver to go on false news. And Dawn Bazile, she can do what she wants. You know, capitalized, she's that hungry for money. Been in politics long enough. Hell, she should have made enough book deals and everything like Bernie to be a multimillionaire. But, I mean, people are trying to do what they want. But me personally, before I saw it, I get the hell out. And I wouldn't do it. That's just me.
Yes, sir. And if you're talking, there's two different things. So if you're talking Bernie Sanders going to Fox and talking about his policies, getting ready for election, that's one.
Bernie is an independent clown, and he's a Trojan horse, and I don't care for Bernie at all. So, you mean, it is what it is. Anything Bernie does doesn't surprise me, so I never care for the guy anyway.
All I'm saying is that to me, there's a difference between Bernie and Dawn Bazile. Dawn Bazile going to Fox, I don't know why she did that. I mean, you know, some people, right, it's like you got to eat and whatever. I don't know if she got blackballed. I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I can find out. But with the Bernie thing, like I said, I just think that you keep your enemies very, very close. And so, you know, I just feel like that.
In this regard, Bernie did it. Amy Klobuchar is going to do it. Mayor Pete Buttigieg is going to do it. Look, at the end of the day, you hope to be the president of all the people. And
right.
The only way you can be the president of all the people is to talk to all the people. And even if not one person voted for Bernie Sanders or Amy Klobuchar or you know, Mayor Pete or any of the people that are willing to do the town halls with Bret Baier over on Fox, at least you get, as you said, the opportunity to stand there and say, hey, look, I don't fear coming here. I don't fear you people. I don't fear any of these things. So, yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, it's a plus.
Because at the end of the day, and I only say these things, so please understand, Jim. But at the end of the day, say with Barack Obama, he can run and run for certain things, but certain white supremacist people are going to still look at him as a nigger, right? So that'll never go, right? So he can never get past that. So if you know they're still going to call you the N-word, If you know they're not going to agree with your policies, go ahead and do it. And that's why I said to you earlier, and Reggie, you were listening, that's why I said to you, Jim, earlier, is the fact that with Barack, that was disappointing, is that when you have the Affordable Health Care Act as it is now, it's not what it was supposed to be, because he was so concerned about losing or not getting the votes. Well, damn, Barack, go and get – if you can't get the votes, take it to the people. That's all. If you lose, guess what? You can put it on the other side. I tried my best. They don't want it, so the hell with it. I'm going to go with what I can go with. He didn't do that. That was very disappointing for me. And that's what I'm saying with, you know, with the senator and anybody that's going to go to Fox, is that they don't like you anyway. But just go do it, and guess what? You might get a couple of here and there out of that, and that's what I thought. A final question for you, Jim.
Sure.
Before you go, is this report that's coming out, that's out right now, I should say, is there more legs to this? What are the Dems going to do? And, excuse me, more importantly, they're in a precarious situation. I think, like I just said with Barack, try to impeach the dude, right? And if you don't have the votes, you already put it out there, let the chips fall where they may. But what do you think is going to happen moving forward with all of this media attention with Attorney General Barr, Mueller probably a subpoena to testify maybe next year, probably, or the end of this year. What do you think is going to happen, and how does that shape the Dem Party in terms of a positive message?
I think, number one, you got two tracks there. One, they're going to call Mueller up. He's going to testify. They'll make a decision as to whether or not they should go for impeachment. They'll play that card. But at the end of the day, the people in this country want to hear about the pocketbook issues in, like, healthcare, jobs, and what are you going to do for me? This is an issue of going out and winning in 2020 as opposed to trying to get rid of Donald Trump through impeachment, because that's not going to happen. So I think what they're going to do is bring in Mueller. I think they're going to tighten things up. There's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, through emoluments and other ways that the president, you know, can be dinged on. They can censure him without impeaching him. So there's a lot of tricks up, you know, political tricks that can be done that can drive the president nuts, while at the same time placating some of the more fiery members of the party who just want his head on a silver platter.
Yeah, I would say, and I know Troy and Reggie and T and Orlando online, Jim, the only thing I would say is this, and Reggie alluded to it, is that, you know, Democrats play checkers and Republicans play chess. The fact is that the Democrats need to not allow this president to say no collusion, no obstruction, and go on this tour and not face it. Even if you're not going to impeach him, you have to combat that. And one of the problems they have is that they don't do that. So this president's 30-something percent of what he has can potentially increase because they're not combating the fact that he really wanted, you know, FBI agents and other people to do the wrong thing to protect him. They need to push that agenda, and they don't do that. As Reggie has mentioned, they don't do that. They're soft. There's some other words for it, but they're soft in what they do. So how do they do that with the president saying, hey, no collusion, no obstruction?
Well, they do it with the fact that Manafort is going to jail. You've got General Flynn. You've got Papadopoulos. You've got Roger Stone. You've got so many members of his inner circle at some point in time during the course of his first campaign and then during the early stages of his presidency who clearly are going to jail. And you beat the drum that is this is just, these are facts. This is not me spouting off something that I believe. These are absolutely and totally facts. So it's not spinning anything. And if they just stick to the facts and say this is what's going on, bring Mueller up there, go through an impeachment hearing if they want to, I think that makes sense. At the end of the day, you know, make sure nobody forgets that this guy did everything humanly possible to subvert justice.
Yeah. Well, I'm thoroughly convinced he's got a lot of naked pictures of a lot of people with horses and trampolines and gym, everything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, probably in the vault of the of the National Enquirer.
Exactly, with his buddy. There, you're right, and that's a whole nother discussion that we'll
another
have to
discussion
have.
For another day.
But
it's been a lot of fun, as always.
Yes, sir. I know you got to run.
You
got to
stop
meeting
like this, right?
Hey, we'll
hey, have
do
a
some
wonderful
other stuff with Jim.
Easter and Passover, guys. Make it safe.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate your time,
care,
man.
Guys.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Jim Williams, good to have him on. He is from the Huffington Post, the San Francisco Examiner, and, of course, the podcast of Politically Incorrect. I'm going to come back and get to Troy Sparks, independent sports writer. Talk about the Bucks. That is there added expectations and pressure on them with the new facility being the number one seed for first time in forever? I can't even. I was doing research. I don't even know the first time. Look at the Brewers and their MVP starting to hit the ball. And the Packers, what they're going to do in the NFL draft. So we'll take a 30-second break, come back, get to Reggie Howell, we'll get to Tony T. Mac McClain and my good friend Big O, Orlando Hughes on the pass. Stay tuned.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution, asks,
what's complete freedom? For me, it's an open road with the top down. It's my bare arms getting warmed by the sun. It's my bare arms without a trace of psoriasis.
Complete Freedom, brought to you by the complete relief of Dermarest psoriasis. Unlike brands which only relieve itching and inflammation, Dermarest psoriasis also removes the embarrassing scales, allowing healthy skin to grow.
Healthy skin? That's complete freedom.
Dermarest, the psoriasis solution.
Welcome back to the panel. And if you miss any part of our broadcast, make sure you go to our website, thebachelorpadnetwork.com, bachelor with a T, network.com. Follow us on Facebook at Pad Nation, on Twitter, Pad Nation, the number 2 at Twitter. Back to the phones. He is an independent sports writer in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He is Troy Sparks. And Troy, always good to have you on, bro, man, to give some insight. Thank you so much, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. You have Reggie Howell, Tony T. Mac McClain, and Orlando Hughes. I'm going to go first, if that's okay with them. You know, it's been so freaking easy for this Bucks team. And when we started the year, before the year, and talked about the arena and the expectations and numbers and presenting those numbers and being successful, they've done that. They have the best record of any team in the NBA. And they've gone through Detroit. I don't think anybody on this broadcast thought that Detroit would win a game, let alone win the series. But are we getting, you know, fast in our answers in terms of how the Bucks are winning. In other words, they're blowing them out. And so is that what we should expect from the Bucks moving forward in the second and third round, getting to the finals with this team?
Yeah. If you go all the way back to when Mike Budenholzer was hired as the coach, he sat down with Giannis Antetokounmpo and Rick Chris Middleton. They had a private dinner, and Giannis pulled out his notebook saying, what is it that you expect from us? And so what Budenholzer came with was the same thing that he did in Atlanta. He spread the floor. He didn't want the middles clogged, so everybody is out there beyond the three-point line ready to shoot. So their motto this year is let it fly, make or miss. And so the three-point shots that they make is pretty good, and then they get a big lead. But when they miss them, then they have to go back and play defense, and that's the other thing that Budenholzer stressed with the Bucks throughout the season. So we're not surprised as to why they got the best record in the league. They did have to play better defense, though, and then the offense was going to come anyways.
But you look at this team, Boston is destined. Their comeback last night, they're up 2-0. So, most of people expect them to win 4 or 5. You move forward, and you don't really have to worry about bigs. But my Sixers, if they get past Brooklyn, my and Orlando Sixers get past Brooklyn, you have to worry. You have to account for a big fella inside, even if he's a little injured. So is Milwaukee positioned themselves with that roster to take care of that and exploit that position with Joel Embiid, because he's a handful. Even injured, he's a handful. So are they in a position, you think, to handle him and handle that situation?
Yeah, if you put Brook Lopez on him, because they don't have any other backup centers that can handle Embiid except Lopez, and if Lopez stays out of foul trouble, then more than likely he'll be able to handle Embiid. But your Sixers and Orlando Sixers got a scare in the first game there against the Nets. So hopefully it can pull back.
Right, my concern is, though, Milwaukee is the team to beat. I'm not sold personally on the East, and I think if I'm not mistaken, you can correct me. I thought you said Milwaukee would lose to Boston in the second round. I thought you said that. If I'm mistaken, you can correct me. But if that's not the case, again, in a half-court set, you have to be able to ball if you can ball inside, and Philly can ball inside. I don't see Milwaukee balling inside, number one. Number two, I don't see Milwaukee defending balling inside. So, again, I understand what you're saying, but, if this kid is healthy, I don't see anybody on Milwaukee checking him, which to me changes the dynamics. But, again, once again, we still have to look at, Boston, Indiana, and Boston's up. And, of course, Toronto and Orlando, Orlando's, split the series. They go to Orlando. You would assume that Toronto and Philly will play, and then Boston will play Milwaukee, and that it goes that way. But so you won't have to deal with the bigs with Philly until that final round. But, again, there should be some concern, I would think, Troy, with bigs, with this team and how they defend. Not about scoring, but how they defend the bigs inside.
No, they don't have much help not defending the bigs inside. They just have to go out and get a fast start and make enough shots to create a cushion so that they won't have to worry about it. You can just let the big guy have his way. Now, in the second round, I believe they're going to play Boston, and so you got to deal with Al Horford, who can – post up down low and shoot the three from outside. So that's a different problem. But first, they have to take care of Detroit. and then they can worry about the second round.
Yeah, we're talking with Troy Sparks, of course, on the pad. I don't think anything Detroit-wise. Before I go to the crew, Troy, you look at how the Eastern Conference is played out, and really, you know, I mean, you got identical situations, if you will, with Milwaukee, Detroit, Boston, Indy, both 2-0, and then Philly, Brooklyn, Toronto, Orlando is splitting. The West Coast is pretty much the same, but, you know, nobody, Troy, I'm assuming you, nobody saw Golden State losing. And the way they lost, they were down. They were up 31, and they lost at home to the Clippers. So from your perspective, do you think that Golden State is in trouble if they get to the second round, saying Houston wins their second round against Utah? Or do you think it's sort of like a bump in the road and they'll continue to get to the finals and get to the NBA finals?
I think if they make it to the second round, they're going to have trouble. I can see the Rockets playing Golden State. They're going to have trouble because not only do you have to stop James Harden, you have to stop Aaron Gordon, you have to stop PJ. Yeah, so, I mean, Houston is the problem for Golden State. And then now with DeMarcus Cousins out, I don't think that they can – They will really have to come together and play together and not create any drama and just play like they know how to play in order for them to get past Houston and make it to the Western Conference Finals. I mean, the East is pretty much wide open, especially since LeBron is not in the East anymore. So it can be anybody's game, anybody's series. Anybody can go to the championship. So it's wide open.
And I'm glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that because I think that people that are listening think that it's either Toronto, Boston, or Philly, not even including Milwaukee, who actually, by the way, guess what, folks, have been blowing out people for a while. But I get the whole Toronto, Boston, Philly conversation without Milwaukee. So I'm glad you said that because I don't think the East – and I said this off air to T-Mac, Big O, and Reggie Rez that I don't think the Eastern Conference will win a final this year. But, you know, that's my opinion. Talking with Troy Sparks, of course, independent sports writer, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on the pad. If you have a question, hit us up at 646-929-0130 or hit us up on Facebook at Pad Nation, or of course on Twitter at Pad Nation number 2 at Twitter, Pad Nation 2 at Twitter. With that, I'm going to go with my good friend Tony T. Matt McClain hanging on the line. And what say you, sir, and good evening?
Good evening. Troy, we all know how important Giannis is to the team, but I think the Bucks live and die by Eric Bledsoe. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say so too because he helped save the game last night and gave the Bucks a 2-0 lead. So that should be pretty good for the team. He is one of the best guards, I say the best guard on the team. Plus, he signed a new 4-year contract, so he's not going anywhere for 4 years. And Bledsoe pretty much turned his career around, especially after being, I think he started in L.A. with the Clippers and then went to Phoenix, and he didn't like Phoenix. So now he's here, and so he's making the most of his opportunities.
And switching over to baseball a little bit, is it too early for the Brewers to start thinking about maybe giving I've forgotten his name already. This is terrible. Craig Kimbrell a buzz, or is he too rich for them?
I think they pretty much got whoever they got in the budget that they were going with because Craig Kimball might be out there still, I think it's kind of too early, because you can just say that this is what's going on at the end of April. Nothing's really written in stone yet.
Mm-hmm.
But they are having problems with some of their pitching, and so they're 12-7 right now, just barely holding on to the National League Central, but too early to even think about something like that.
Yeah, and I mean, the Lord knows, if you want, I'll trade your pitching woes with my Yankees and we'll go from there. But, you know, the reigning MVP has shown why he's the reigning MVP and the way he's been hitting the ball. You know, I mean, let's be clear about that. I want to go to my good friend, Reggie Howell in Richmond, Virginia. Go ahead, Reg.
Hey, Troy, good evening. How you doing, sir?
Doing good.
You know, maybe it's me, but what the ham sandwich going on in baseball when a commissioner comes out with a new ad? I want the boys to be boys. You have a hitter for the Chicago White Sox just takes a liner. I mean, takes that baby for a ride. Flings his bat to his side, not the other side, his side of the dugout. Trots around the bases. Next time, he gets plunked in the butt, all H break loose, and then umpire throws the person who got hit in the butt out the game. You know,
yeah.
It's amazing the hypocrisy of baseball. And I know T is going to be saying, amen, amen, but don't give me this BS when you have very few young black players out there. They show energy, show emotion. Then all of a sudden, they're victimized by not only the officials, but by the batter. I mean, you know, you stand there, you hit a shot, the fans go crazy. Just because the poor pitcher can't get the guy out, he hits him, and then a brawl breaks out. What's your thoughts on that in the follow-up about your Green Bay Packers NFL schedule?
I think that there's unwritten rules in baseball. You hit my guy, hit your guy, but it shouldn't be to the extreme where you're going at a player's head and even trying to get tossed out of the game. It's nothing new. They've been doing that for years, and so everybody pretty much should know the code of baseball. Pitchers can pitch inside. They should have a right to pitch inside. But I just think that when you intentionally hit a player, that's just not cool. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but I think there was the young leadoff hitter for the Braves last year. They played Miami, and then their starting pitcher hit the guy with the first pitch on purpose, and he got thrown out of the game. So all that right there is just something that's nothing new to me.
Your schedule of your Packers. What do you think about your schedule of your Packers?
Oh, man, first five games. I was looking at it. I got it right here. First five games are at home. I think preseason they play Oakland and Kansas City. And then in the regular season they play those same two teams back-to-back, regular season and the preseason. First five of the seven games are at home. That should be pretty good for the Packers. And Aaron Rodgers, as a starter, is 64-17-1 at home. So it should be pretty good. I think that they're going to have trouble down the stretch, especially when it gets to in December, because they have two home games, two road games. They have a late bye in November, which is a week before Thanksgiving. So they have to get a good start in order to at least meet show that they're real serious contenders, at least to make the playoffs, especially under the new coach. And by the way, congratulations to the Virginia Cavaliers. They used one of our Wisconsin-born and bred coaches to get the job done, but they got the job done.
Yeah, that's just crazy. That really is. That's just absolutely crazy. But, you know, you keep doing what you're doing. I want to go to Orlando Hughes and the good city of Philadelphia for comments and questions. Good evening, Orlando. What say you, sir?
Good evening. Good evening. What's going on, gentlemen? Troy, how are you feeling?
Doing good. There's nothing good about the city of Philadelphia. I used to live there.
It's always something good. It's always something good about the city.
As you know, one of the primary...
Always something good. Listen, I want to go with this West Coast matchup. So you got some non-traditional teams representing some big markets. Obviously, the Nets and the Sixers, no Knicks. And then in L.A., So do the Clippers put the flags, the black cloth over top of all the Laker jerseys and hang them in the Staples Center?
They might as well with that win. Oh, my God. They might as well with that win over Golden State and their opportunity or their chance at least to win and move forward.
Look, you can never count Doc Rivers out. He has his team ready to play. They already feel like they're the underdogs anyway. So it would be a big surprise if Golden State actually lose to the Clippers. I don't know if you remember, this was back in the 90s when Denver was the 8th seed and Seattle had the best record. And they beat Seattle, upset them in the first round.
Listen, Brian Stiff, yeah. Reggie Williams, Robert Pack, Dikembe Mutombo, and one other person. Oh, yeah, definitely know that.
Okay, yeah, so this has the making of an upset. In any series that's going on right now, there's got to be somebody that's going to be upset. That's what I feel.
Cool. That's all I got here. Keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Okay, thanks. Anybody here?
I appreciate Orlando. You know, when you look at the Packers, Troy, where do you think they're going in their first pick? I know some controversy in what Coach McCarthy said and how it was fired and all that kind of stuff, but I always call Aaron Rodgers the weatherman because he's always on his back. He's always looking up at the sky. He's always determined the weather. So, where do you think they're going at this point with their first pick?
I think they're going to go with offensive lineman, and then they're going to go with a tight end. I really feel like they need to protect Rodgers, and Rodgers has to do a better job of making sure that he doesn't get put in a situation where he's going to go down. It's going to be kind of curious as to how he gets along with new coach.
How about blocking, though? How about blocking,
well,
Troy? They need to block for the dude, though. They got to block for him. Like he,
they can block. Look, they can block for
the
dude.
I don't see it.
They can block for the dude, but sometimes, as has been already noticed, dude holds the ball too long. You can only hold a guy up for so long, and then you got to decide what you want to do with the football. I mean, you can't hold up 300-pound guys forever. So I guess that's one of those things he has to work on to try to make himself – not to put himself in a situation where he's going down regardless of who's blocking for him.
No, and I get that. All I'm saying is that if a 300-pound guy tackles you, you know, on a Monday and – he continues to tackle you on a Sunday, that's a problem. That means there's some consistency. So that means that somebody got a block. But he can't – tackles it, and I'm with you. Look, Ben Roethlisberger, I'm a Steeler guy. He holds the ball forever. The point is, I'm saying is that those are isolated incidents if you protect your quarterback. But if you're not going to protect your quarterback, if it's happening every drop back, that's a problem. So I'm wondering what Green Bay, under this new coach and regime, is going to try to do to protect him.
Yeah, we're curious to see ourselves and see what he's going to do and whether Aaron is going to listen to a new coach, because he has to give
Good
in
point.
And listen sometimes. He can't just
Good
sit
point.
There. I mean, he's not going to run this new coach. New coach already said well, we're going to run certain plays, and this is how it's going to go. You do have the options of checking out, but more than likely, you're not going to do what you did under the previous coach.
And I get that. All I'm saying is that he's still your I don't even want to say best player, but he still gives you the best chance to win. He can't be looking at the sky. I said about, you know, Joe Flacco. And stuff. Like, he's got to be protected. That backside on a quarterback has to be protected. I mean, you have to protect your quarterback. If your quarterback's on the ground all the time, that's a problem. So we'll see. Troy, I appreciate you, man. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk with you next week. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir. Troy Sparks, of course, he is an independent reporter in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I want to bring in the guys before we go to break. And again, T, you know, you have to be able to be responsible enough to protect your quarterback. Even if your quarterback's the sorriest quarterback in the league, he can't be on the field if he's on his back. And I've been very critical of the Packers forever, like the last 10 years. Like, as good as Aaron Rodgers is, he could be even great if they protect the dude. But the dude is scrambling all the time. Like, how do you a guy at his caliber scramble, have him scrambling all the time? And I think it's almost a weird, bizarre type of way with the Packers are looking for the excitement rather than the protection of their quarterback.
I think it also speaks to how football, you know, gets so enamored with the quote unquote skill positions that they forget that, you know, you still have to have, as Keith Jackson used to call them, the big uglies to protect the guy. I can't remember the last time that they, maybe not a number one pick, but I can't even remember the last time that they've drafted a quality offensive lineman. They've gone through a few linemen over the past few years. And
right, probably Bologna, I guess, that dude. I mean, outside of him at tackle, I don't see anybody that they've drafted that's been working.
They haven't. I'm trying to remember their last Pro Bowl lineman.
Right.
I want to say Frank Winters, but that goes back to the Brett Favre days, I think.
Right.
So it's been a while. I mean, and plus they, you know, it's twofold, because if you can't protect the quarterback, that if you try to get a running game, you can't. Well, you know, I always found it interesting that they always, you know, they basically said that Eddie Lacy basically ate his way out of Green Bay, but
right,
you know, what about those fat ass linemen that you've been cutting the last, you know, 6 years?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and you know, Reg, you know. You look at that situation, look at across the world, you know, we off air, the four of us have been applauding the NFL for, or at least applauding Seattle, Reggie, for making Russell Wilson the highest paid player, deservedly so, in the league. But we also know too, Reg, that if God forbid, and I hold my hand to God right now because I don't want that to happen. God forbid something happens, though, and they will say Russell Wilson, the highest paid player in the league. Or if he's doing tiddlywinks or checkers or whatever, Russell Wilson, the highest paid player in the league. That's where they go, because they want to make people stumble on his success. And, oh, by the way, he's the best player on a team that needs him to be the best player to be compensated for. I have zero problem with that at all, Reggie.
Can we be honest about something? When Doug Williams played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he had the nerve to ask for $800,000. Mm-hmm. And management said, go fly a damn kite. He said he would capitulate on $500,000, but they wouldn't move on it. He was the 51st paid quarterback. I know we're talking some 20, 30 years ago, but mm-hmm. it shows you the disrespect of what black quarterbacks go through. And second of all, he had to make a power move. But isn't it interesting? You have Will Cain and all these Barry Goldwater Klan service on the radio that talk about, well, you know, when you go ahead and spending that kind of money on a franchise quarterback, it really sets your team back. It's kind of funny. A certain quarterback up in Minnesota's team I brought out last night, I ain't hear nobody say that. And he has more money than Russell Wilson. He has a, what, $96 million guaranteed contract? He's going to try to hamstring the team.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, white supremacy rings very strong when it comes to these clowns and the talking booth, these mouth jockeys, in my opinion.
You know, only thing Kirk Cousins is missing is a ski mask and a gun. Because he's definitely stealing money from Minnesota.
Tell him. And Russell has a ring and should have had two because he's incompetent of his coaching staff. And Kirk Cousins, what has he done other than rob the Minnesota Vikings and others?
Yeah. Right. But it's, you know, yes, more black quarterbacks have been getting paid. Yes, more black quarterbacks. But there's still the mentality. That's the thing.
Right.
Again, you do that bar graph of the Buccaneers before Doug Williams and the Buccaneers after Doug Williams left, like night and day. And
yeah,
same thing. You could do that same thing right now, pre-Russell, the 3 years before. Seventh year now in the league. Give me the 7 years before Russell got there. Give me the 7 years after Russell. See what, you know, what do you, you know, then what?
I guess, too, Orlando, my concern is that, you know, you'll get a player at that caliber to make that money, but there's going to be the stigma. And if you're in Philly or whatever the case may be, is that this player, as great as we all feel that Russell can ball out, like he can be the best quarterback, best player, period, on the planet, if he has some issues being the best, and I'm playing advocate on this one, I'm asking you this and making this comment, is that if he has issues on the field, and his team struggle, then they go straight back to the money. They go straight back to the money. They don't care about Donnie Frisbee, I call him, who can't even be on the Canadian football team. He can't even make a roster. No disrespect to our Canadian people. He can't make a roster as a player on the CFL, but won't get as much disrespect or negative vibes or racial vibes or anything like that, then if Russell Wilson tripped and hurt his wife or tripped in whatever the case may be. They are waiting for this man to be the highest paid player in the league for him to mess up. And that's the problem we're still facing, Orlando, with these issues.
First of all, Russell Wilson is from an elite bloodline. You know,
that's right.
His father, his grandfather, his aunt, his uncle, Dr. Wilson, Harrison D. Wilson, my president, who I proudly say my president, was, you know, a baller at Kentucky State. And got a little small run with a team in the NBA for a second. Russell Wilson has been coached up. You best believe that Harrison B. is unable, and I'm not going to call out his other family members, have schooled him on what media will do to you, what women will do to you, and what this league will do to you. The one thing that I never hear Russell Wilson given credit for is as a undersized quarterback, because remember, they dogged the hell out of Vic with that. Undersized. And as you mentioned, that guy, Johnny B. Dad's football.
Frisbee.
Who they all love, who still can't play. But Russell Wilson keeps himself available. He's played all 16 games. Not only does he throw the ball, he runs the ball, but he doesn't take unnecessary hits. He doesn't expose his body. He understands that. Then what he does in the community, as far as Seattle's concerned, is a miracle in itself. The way that he speaks, he's been prepped, and they're trying to snap and break him. And we, you know, I'm not a fan of 44, but when 44 was the president, and you know Michelle was the first sister that he dated, he married her, You best believe that they're trying to find something from Russell from his time down there in Raleigh and from his time up there in Madison, Wisconsin, trying to find some dirt. And 7 years in the game, they haven't found it. So if this brother goes out and finds nothing but hardship now that he's signed that contract, who cares? He's entitled to every bit of it because he wasn't paid before. And, you know, how good
but don't is the we want to care? But don't we want to care, though, Orlando, if, you know, he signs that contract and something goes awry? Like, I understand the whole who cares, but, you know, if something kind of quirky happens, then we're back at Tiger Woods all over again, in my opinion.
But he's not Tiger Woods. I mean, listen, Russell doesn't shy from his blackness. He doesn't shy from his family's legacy. You know, Tiger, excuse me for a second, that Negro Tiger, who came up with whatever the hell he said that he was. When Tiger's ass got locked up, the few times that he's been locked up in Jupiter, Florida, you find that record, that arrest record, which is public record, and it says black, Negro, African, black.
Mm-hmm.
Then everything sort of call him an N, all right? That's how he's identified. So, you know, that clown Tiger, he's an ass. He deserves everything that happened to him. And he's another clown that had the support of black people throughout this country and this world who looked up to him and then got him inspired. And he hasn't helped a damn soul of anybody who looks like him. I don't care if you like him, but you at least should be satisfied and happy and understanding your importance to the black community, and you let him down.
Right. Preach.
T, I got to ask you, though, you know, when you look at that a situation as it relates to baseball, that there are people who will compliment those few black athletes in baseball and what they're doing, and then and so doing that, misunderstand the fact that the numbers of and I'm always going to keep saying this until they get it right. The numbers in baseball are not fair. Like you can promote a black player and how great he or she would be, but if the numbers overall are not there, we need to promote them, but also say, and by the way, blank. And I think what Orlando said about Tiger, almost like Tiger, the roar is back and all this other stuff. They want to jump on his bandwagon. It's almost like a African American player, you know, like a David Price, let's say, case in point, like. You know, Boston fans aren't killing him. Now he's off to a good start. He's pitching well. And we know the David Price of David Price. But when it goes awry, then they're back to calling him a nigger in private. But right now they're singing the praises. And maybe those athletes and maybe those like us who understand those athletes need to sing the praises more. So, because we know that when it goes awry, they're going to go back to the N-word and everything else under the sun, if that makes
any
sense.
Yeah, but see, my thing is, let's enjoy the good part about this. You know, I think, we're all guilty of this. We get caught up in, you know, the other side. And we all know that we're one potato chip away from the other side. It's happened several times. But let's appreciate – I go back to what Orlando said. Let's appreciate how he played this out, because he basically said, oh, come tax day, if y'all don't sign me, I'll just, you know, we'll table this. And, you know, he didn't go to Instagram to talk to anybody about that, at least about the money part. He waited till after he got his money. He got what he had to do, and he said, okay, let's play. Now it helps to have some nice little eye candy that just happens to be his wife next to him when he says it. So that just shows you that he's got a little flair and got a hell of a taste in women. But that's another 2-hour conversation in and of itself. Let's appreciate Russell for what he is, because that's the thing. Because, see, Orlando nailed it. I'm happy for Tiger. I'm happy for him. But I'm not gonna forget all that stuff from before when he made it a point to say that he was Kaplan Asian or Kuplakanian or whatever the hell
I'm not happy for the historical of it.
I ain't forgot all that other stuff from back in the day now. And you never should. Historically,
because Tiger's OJ, Reggie. Tony.
He never learns his lesson.
He never learns his lesson.
Yeah, he never learns his lesson.
Hey, LA, can you do me a favor and give Tiger something for his head? Once he took that hat off, I said, "Oh my God."
That's the Barack Obama effect. Take a look at Obama's presidential picture when he went in, and then you look at his presidential picture on the way out. So luckily, Barack didn't have to dodge any fire. Five irons along the way, but that's a whole other story.
But a Tiger would say, "Hey, you know what? I want to thank everybody. And by the way, you know, the history, the moment of Jackie Robinson's coming up, and I acknowledge that. As much as I don't appreciate Shaq and stuff, like guys like him, like understand the game
and they know he's not that guy. They realize the folks who came before them. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And you know what? There will be a day of reckoning. Matter of fact, I think he's already. No, Tiger's had a few days of reckoning, I guess, in that sense, and he probably still has some more. But that's why I think we appreciate a Russell Wilson. And look, there's always going to be that other side. It's like Pavlov's dog, man. We're used to it. I don't say it to justify it, but we have to be aware of it. That's all. But I think in some instances, let's not get so aware of it that we can't enjoy the moment, because this was skillfully played. He played this like he would play any defense in the NFC West. And as he's done on the field, he came out on top. And look, you already got folks saying the Spike Lee line, that's too much money for one you know what to have. But
right.
You know what? He'll take that all the way to the bank. And who knows? Maybe he can get another ring out of it, because Lord knows he should have dueling rings at the very least. But who knows? Maybe this inspires Seattle to do something.
Right. And I get the fact that he wants to be positive and win and everything. But even with Tiger, guys, winning, they were talking about how the DUI and how he got divorced from his wife. And all. They throw all that stuff in, and he doesn't say, you know what, that's the past, let it be the past, here's where I am. He doesn't do that for his own self,
and that's
a problem.
Bruh. We had a president that didn't defend himself for 8 years.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? So, I mean, you know, again, not justifying it. I'm just saying. Some guys are willing to not whatever. But I would think that you would want to at the very least, defend yourself. But see, I'm not going to wait on these guys to try and, you know, speak for themselves anymore. I'm not speaking for them no more. If they can't speak for themselves, why should I try to help speak for them? I'll speak up for now, guys that will speak for themselves, you know, more power to them. Give them the mental fist bump and all that. So let's appreciate the ones that do recognize, and the ones that don't, oh, well, maybe we'll keep the light on for you.
Yeah.
But, L.A.,
and that's,
you know, it's funny, L.A.
Go ahead.
You got two contradicting people, right? You got Tiger, who they're all over for – he had a serious back injury. But he and his wife, who wasn't anything before Tiger, but he had a bad relationship with his wife, the white wife. He didn't do anything else, but he just had a bad relationship between his white wife. And so that's public. So they hate him. Russell Wilson has an excellent relationship with Sierra. Sierra's kid, the city of Seattle, says everything positive, right? They don't like him. Now they're talking about the man's money. That's what I talk about. I laugh at some white folks and black folks because it's like, when is, do you know what's good? You know, and I tell people in a minute, I'm not a heaven or hell believer like that. But if you're a believer in that, like if you walk through the gates of heaven, if you would you even know you're there? Would you know you're there?
Yeah, really.
You don't like T.L. But T.L. never drank and did anything wrong to his body.
Never found him in bed with a 12-year-old. Never got arrested. And all that other stuff.
The ultimate commitment. Like, you look at T.O.'s career. Here's a man that had average skill at best when he came out, and he bust his ass to become T.O. Like, that's amazing. But they hate on him. You know? So it's like, you know, it's folk don't know what they want. So,
yeah,
you know,
it's you know, and
I'm
you know,
about to get locked up, you guys, because this person behind me, if he hits his horn one more time, I will get out the car.
Yeah,
it's, you know, unfortunately, it is the plight of the black athlete, and which mirrors in many ways the plight of the black man in this country, because look, you know, I'm not going to lie. When I've told Reggie this, and I'll say this as well. When Tiger first won, the initial thing was, okay, cool. But the second thing out of my mind was somewhere, the Gloria Allreds and the Gail Kings of the world are saying, okay, let's go get him. Why do I think all of a sudden that the women he had the relationship with, that someone isn't going to them and said, you need to say he raped you instead of saying he had sex with you. And then we'll have all of a sudden HBO will have a, you know, Leaving Masterland documentary which will come out at some point, you know?
Mm-hmm. So,
I did get
Oprah Winfrey not putting the facts in the order. That's why she had to back up with the Michael Jackson one. That's a whole other 2-hour show.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, but see, you got to remember the climate, because see, that's in a sense why I'll say, okay, happy for him, but know that they don't. You know, he's basically had his semi OJ moment, and he still may have a few more OJ moments before land, because he still thinks that they love him. Because see, me personally. I don't know if you guys saw this thing a few weeks back where I guess he was coming to thing and a guy, you know, has a T-shirt of his mugshot, and he was there strategically to see what kind of reaction he would get. It was very TMZ like. I'll just leave it at that. So yeah,
right.
The very same people who are Jimmy flexing after Sunday will be the same ones that will call him a dirty MF if things should go the other way again.
Yeah, and that's the issue. Reggie, going back to the NBA playoffs, you look at you know, Brooklyn and Philly tonight, Denver, San Antonio, both of those series are 0-2. You know, and then Golden State, I think we talked about when you were on, the fact is that, you know, all the series outside of two are even. Do you see anything, what you've been watching, where a series can go the other way? I mean, it's surprising. The Golden State and the Clippers are 1-1, and Houston and Utah, and Houston's up 2-0.
You know, I'm really not surprised that it's 1-1 with the Clippers and Golden State, because Doc Rivers has a pedigree. You have Jerry West as the mastermind putting his team together, and they're not fearful. And hell, they're playing with house money. They're like, we got the champ, so what? Worst thing that happens is we get beat. I'm going to give our best shot. You know,
right.
Your 76ers, man, that press conference when my man said, well, you know, I apologize, then start snickering and laughing. Me personally, I want to know what New Jersey Nets are going to do now, because Philly is Philly. It's like either you can be a punk, we're going to punk you. No, and I know what I'm talking about, and T-Mac, in the Big East, it was like no peas allowed, and this being a family show, I can't say what I want to say. It's going to be a man game tonight. You know, if they get popped in the mouth and they don't back down, then Celtics going to run their ass off. But if they stand up and act like they got men, then it's going to be an old-fashioned war, just like when the Bulls and the Bad Boys Pistons play. So I'm interested to see how the officials call this game, especially with the Nets and the 76ers. We're going to see, you know, who's going to be the real man in the middle tonight. Oh, hello, anybody there?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I'm apologizing, I'm muting my own phone there. When you look at the teams there, Orlando and T, as I mentioned, with Phoenix and Brooklyn, it tied. Denver, San Antonio is tied. Golden State, the Clippers probably the most surprising tide. You know, what will happen, you think, in a second round as it relates to the confidence of each team? I mean, Golden State is, I'm assuming, is going to be that confident team. They had a, you know, a little bump in the road, but at the end of the day, they take care of the Clippers. But we can't say that with the Spurs and Denver. We can say that the Spurs is an underdog, not over. And then certainly with Philly and Brooklyn. So you look at these teams, it's all about confidence. It's certainly about matchups, but it's about confidence. Who do you see making that big adjustment to try to win the second round?
You mean third game?
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with Reggie to the sense of, you know, Brooklyn got the next two games at home now. If they just hold court at home, you got a problem. You got a problem, because I think as good and as talented as this Philly team is, and I do think they'll win the series, but I think with them now, it's not about basketball anymore now, because the expectation level, has been, you know, now are we talking about the we owe you 80 team? No, God no. That's a whole other level of angst. But you know, the East is as wide open as it's been in years. It is anybody. So if you're not, you know, if you're quote-unquote still thinking that it's just a home-and-home in the middle of February, you know, and this is the playoffs, that's something on you. And see, that's now, a lot of that goes back to the coach. You know, I know Orlando, you know, I know there's a lot of people that drumbeat gets louder and louder with Blair Brown Right. Especially if they don't come through, because this is basically there for the taking right now. There for the taking. And the fact that they basically let Brooklyn steal a game, and if it wasn't for the fact that they got out to a big-ass lead on the other night, Brooklyn might have, you know, scared the bejesus out of them again. But tonight's the turning point. If that crowd and whatever gets to them and they allow themselves to get out of their game, it could be dangerous, because I don't think Brown, and I think Orlando will agree with me, I don't think Brown's going to be the guy that's going to be able to get them out of that funk if they go that far open.
Yeah, I agree with that.